Good morning. This is Jim and Pat Sanders for Farm and Country, and our program is For the Birds.
Have you ever had the experience of driving or walking along near an open field, and up in the sky you spot a cloud of quick gray motion, a presence in the forefront, then rapid withdrawal? A dazzling cloud, swirling, pulsating, drawing together to the thinnest of wastes, then wildly twisting in pulses, a fluid pattern of funnels, ribbons, and hourglasses, spills and mixing, ever in motion, dense in one moment, diffuse in the next. It's a stunning and beautiful sight. But what is it? It's birds, hundreds of them. No, thousands, and in exquisite coordination. And what are these birds? They are starlings.
Flocking starlings are one of nature's most extraordinary sights. But why are they moving that way in the first place? When you find them in their multitudes, critical mass, so to speak, a peregrine falcon is probably close by, or perhaps a merlin, prairie falcon, Cooper's hawk, or even a red-tailed hawk. All are capable of invoking the cloud response, though none so spectacularly as a peregrine. Get comfortable, lean back with your binoculars, and look for the predator near the darkest areas where the individuals are packed the tightest. At the edge of such a cloud is a peregrine falcon, intent upon a meal, and the focus of each desperate starling is avoidance. Each individual within the multitude of self-interested starlings is attempting to escape the falcon. And how better than by getting in the middle of the flock and staying there until the peregrine leaves? At each point during the peregrine attack, there are safe places to be, and there are unsafe ones. And so each starling strives to place others between itself and the falcon. The whole display is a grand interaction of predator and prey, like flashing schools of anchovy and their tuna pursuers.
Scientists have recently begun to unlock the answers as to what makes possible the uncanny coordination of these murmurations, as starling flocks are so beautifully known. Recently, using the tools of high-powered video analysis and computational modeling, scientists have found that starling flocks are best described with equations of critical transitions, systems that are poised to tip, to be almost instantly and completely transformed, like metals becoming magnetized or liquid turning to gas. Each starling in a flock is connected to every other. When a flock turns in unison, it can be termed a phase transition. Mathematical analysis of flock dynamics show how each starling's movement is influenced by every other starling and vice versa. It doesn't matter how large a flock is or if two birds are on opposite sides. It's as if every individual is connected to the same network, regardless of size of the flock, whether 100 birds or 4,000. If any one bird turns and changes speed, so will all the others.
One of the most surprising and exotic features of the flocks was their near instantaneous signal processing speed, a mystery that researchers still need to unlock. You can watch some stunning videos on YouTube of starling clouds by searching on the term murmurations.
So where have all these thousands of starlings come from? Well, their full name, European starling, gives us the biggest clue. The European starling, native to Eurasia, has the dubious distinction of being one of the most successful birds introduced to North America. This and several other misguided bird introductions were an effort to introduce into North America all of the birds mentioned in the writings of William Shakespeare. From 100 individuals released in 1890 in Central Park in New York City, an estimated 200 million birds are now found over most of North America, Mexico, and parts of the Caribbean.
The starling is an intelligent, attractive, and very interesting bird, but it has a significant negative impact on native species, and its habit of forming large wintering flocks often make it a very unwelcome pest. Their range is continuing to expand, too. From a pest control perspective, they're highly beneficial and consume large number of insects. They'll also eat garbage, and because they add fruits such as cherries and wild fruits to their diet, they can become an agricultural pest. They'll readily eat suet provided for woodpeckers, and that leads us to another downside of starlings. They're cavity breeders, and they are very aggressive competitors against native species of birds, especially cavity nesting birds such as flickers, bluebirds, and the great crested flycatcher.
Winter roosts of large number of starlings are noisy and produce lots of droppings and a real mess. And while accumulations of bird droppings enrich the soil, they also produce a danger of airborne spores of the disease histoplasmosis. Many attempts have been made to control starling populations, including shooting, trapping, broadcasting alarm calls, poisoning, and the use of pesticides. But it is clear that starlings have found a permanent home in North America. Starlings have a well-developed sense of taste and are repelled by grape flavoring. Fogging with grape flavoring is an effective and an environmentally safe method to discourage these birds from roosting. In our next For the Birds segment, we'll talk about other aspects of European starlings and some of their fascinating behaviors.
This has been Jim and Pat Sanders for Farm and Country, and we're For the Birds.